Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, I am so excited because I have an interview that is literally years in the making, episode 135, Inciting an About Pagan Wiccan Riot. I have the one, the only, inimitable, legendary pagan blogger, Patty Wigington, author, speaker, thinker, badass woman. Patty Wigington is here to talk about her decade plus of writing a witchy column, all of the trends that have come and gone in the pagan community, what it's like to sort of be a public pagan figure giving advice whenever things get sticky, talking about spell failures and when tough conversations have to happen in the pagan community, like when some of our big name pagans mess up. We also talk about the best recipes for cooking babies. So it's really a fun show all the way around. but before we get to that, I do just want to mention that this show would not happen, and it especially would not be happening with regularity without support from you guys. The only reason that this show continues to happen as often as it does and sound as good as it does and continue to be produced as well as it is because of the generous support of folks like you that consider giving as little as a dollar a month on Patreon. So remember, if you would like to support independent pagan podcasts and media like this show, like my show, with Velma Nightshade inciting a brouhaha, consider giving as little as a dollar a month or a dollar a show at patreon.com/incitingprojects. Remember, you only pay for the content that's produced. If no shows are produced that month, you don't pay for anything, but you still get to enjoy all of the back catalog. As little as a dollar a month gets you full unedited audio episodes most of the time. That's at least 15 to 30 minutes of additional content. $5 a month or more gets you all of the video. So myself with Velma, myself with all of my guests, we tend to get up to some funny shenanigans on the videos. So that's always a fun time. So like I said, for $5 a month or more, you get the full video. So if you're thinking, hey, 2020, I think I want to spread some love around to some pagan projects, head on over to patreon.com/incitingprojects. Links for everything are going to be in the show notes. And now here's my interview with Patty Wigington. Patty Wigington, thank you so much for being here on Inciting a Riot today. I am so excited. This show, I feel like, is literally years in the making. We have been talking to each other online for so many years. Thank you so much for being here on the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. This is going to be one for the ages because we've been talking about this forever.
We really have.
And we have like this mutual fan club going on between us. So I'm so glad we finally get to actually speak in person and live. This is awesome.
I am so excited and so pumped and very jealous of your hair this morning.
Thank you. I'm feeling very red.
Patreon supporters that see the video, which are like, half a dozen people, will get to see this fabulous, fabulous mane of hair.
Now I'm really glad I ran a brush through it this morning.
I'm so in love. So Patty, for the three people out there that have no idea who you are and who you've been to the pagan community, which I know is setting it up kind of big, but it's not underselling it. Tell us a little bit about who you are, and sort of what your platform is.
Oh my gosh, so many things to talk about. So just kind of in a nutshell, I have been practicing as a pagan for a little over 30 years. I started in, oh gosh, it was right after I graduated from high school, so 1987-ish. So you can do the math. I mean, it's been a while. And I was fortunate enough that in 2007, I was able to become the about.com at the time, the about.com page editor for their paganism and Wicca page. I was so excited. It's been such a bumpy and mostly uphill ride. It's been awesome. But that opportunity has really brought me the chance to interact with the pagan community on a whole nother level. Because the more people I spoke to, the more I interacted with people, I was able to start doing things like I do the festival circuit, I do workshops, I do bookstore events. And it's all really in the name of building community and helping to educate people. So it's been amazing. And I've been so fortunate because even though about.com is now learnreligions.com, which is kind of a weird name. I didn't pick it. They didn't ask me for my opinion, whatever. So we're now Learn Religions, but my reader base has just been so wonderful and they've embraced the things that I have to say, which has been fantastic because now I'm at the point where I'm actually writing books about my topic instead of, you know, just here's another article for you guys to read. Here you go. Slapped it on up there. So in the past couple of years, I've already had a couple of books come out. This past year, the Daily Spell Journal came out, which is one of my favorites. It's just adorable. It's super cute. It's pocket sized. You can carry it in your purse. And then in 2020, I have two more books coming out. So I'll be doing the festival circuit and plugging those. And just it's so great because I'm so fortunate in that everybody I talk to teaches me something new. And it's just been so wonderful.
If people don't know your name, they definitely know your work because, there were sort of two big main sources of info. I mean, this is sort of, gosh, are we talking pre-Wikipedia days or at least like so early Wikipedia that it wasn't really widely used?
Sure.
In those early days, at least when I was a baby pagan on the internet, there was Witchvox.
Right.
And
right.
There were your articles. If you were on social media, you would either see something that somebody shared from Witchvox or you would see something that somebody shared from, oh, that about.com pagan Wiccan lady.
Right.
That lady.
Right. And I think social media has really been the driving force between the stuff I write, the stuff on Witchbox, and then we had, the Wild Hunt just sort of grew massively around that same time. Social media has been the driving force in getting that information out to people. So all the people that were baby pagans in the later 2000s and into the whatever we're calling the 20 teens. I don't even know what the word is for the decades. The last
the dark ages.
Years, the dark ages. It was a time when dinosaurs roamed the earth. All the newbie pagans were, they were coming up in a time when everybody had social media. So that's where you got your information. And it's been amazing.
And I really like that that you really have sort of been that pillar inside of at least the internet pagan community, because we've seen a lot of similar websites like about.com come and go where they try to do this sort of we'll pay you by click or pay you by whatever kind of I know Chris Bradley did one for sort of a competitor website, I think.
Yeah
And there have been a few, but nobody's really ever lasted as long as you have out there. And so I think it's...
But now I feel really old, so cool, thanks.
You're literally talking about you started 2 years before this show started.
I know.
Both ancient. It's fine.
We are.
I like that we can talk from the perspective of having seen this sort of giant shift in the pagan community and in the way that they get information, in the way that they share information and in the kind of information that they appreciate, because we were sort of talking a little bit ago about the idea that 2019, 2020 is feeling very 2009 again.
Yeah.
There was this little period between 2009 and 2011 when it's like everybody had a pagan podcast, everybody had a pagan blog. You know, these days, right, everybody has a pagan YouTube channel, and, right, you know, everybody's sort of rediscovering paganism. And there's a lot of, you know, reasons as to why people think that that's happening.
Sure.
But it's a time of people discovering paganism and online pagan resources. And I think it's so interesting to be able to reflect on the last 10 years. So,
oh yeah.
In your eyes, as somebody that's been a very consistent sort of Ask Patty kind of person.
I am so much the Ask Patty person.
what kinds of things have people asked over the last 10 years? What are people out there looking for over the past 10 years? Is it the same stuff? Does it change?
I think, you know, it's like I said earlier, I think it's one of those everything old is new again kind of thing. You know, the questions that people were sending into me back in 2007, 2008, 2009, when I first started writing on the internet, you know, I think there were people who were testing the waters. They wanted to see what was out there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the questions could have been answered by me saying, here, let me Google that for you. But I tried not to be that person. I wanted to share that information. So a lot of it was the very basic, very simplistic questions. You know, I want to be a witch. What do I do? What kind of pagan am I? You know, it's like those BuzzFeed quizzes where you figure out what kind of potato you are. It, you know, it's just that kind of thing. So it was a lot of very simplistic and basic beginner 101 level questions. Mm-hmm. And then what I saw was over time, it trended into more, there were more questions about the community as a whole. You know, how do I deal with this kind of person? What sort of environment should I create for myself? And it was a little more outwardly and socially focused. And then now here we are, and the roaring 20s are back, and I'm getting, you know, what kind of potato am I? You know, how do I know, you know, how do I know what kind of magic to practice? What are the things I should do when I start? I will say, thankfully, that the number of weird and crazy questions I've gotten has decreased significantly. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe they're sending all those questions to other people. If so, keep at that. But yeah, the number of just flat out bonkers, weird, bizarre questions I get has diminished significantly. So that's cool.
Well, now I'm wondering what kind of potato I am.
You are a potato souffle.
Oh, I would love to be a potato souffle with the marshmallows.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes, girl.
Oh, so cute.
So I am actually really curious, because you said that a lot of people start off saying, you know, how do I be a witch? How do I, you know, and to be perfectly honest, when I put out a call for sort of, you know, hey, we're going to do this rapid fire Q&A, Ask Patty kind of thing, I just kind of got, like what you're saying, just a lot of those same questions. How do I be a newbie? How do I be a this? How do I be a that?
Right.
Because I think it's really interesting that in our community, our little chunk of the world is both a praxis and there's religion to it as well.
Yes.
There's stuff you can do, and then there's stuff to believe. And you,
right,
you can do either.
Yeah.
You can do both. And I guess you can do neither, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like this weird sort of Venn diagram where what I do and what I believe aren't always they don't always have to happen at the same time, but sometimes there's a little bit of overlap.
Right. And I think that that's such an... because those are the kinds of questions that you get. Like, you know, I was looking through some of the emails, and somebody's like, well, how do I know what's real witchcraft? Or how do I know what the real religion is? Like, oh, well, I see a lot of debate online about the Wheel of the Year. How do I know what the real one is?
Yeah, I think people want validation. They want to know that what they're believing is the right thing.
How do you respond? I mean, to those kinds of questions when you get it. I mean, because the idea of what's real, it doesn't just affect the pagan community. It affects,
sure,
you know, every religious community. I think that we think that some of the big, you know, the big three religions, that they've got that figured out, that they're, right, that they
well,
don't
they
have any crises
they have a
of faith.
Guideline. Right.
But like, I mean, didn't the Methodist Church just diverge or something like that. Because I mean, so like not every, you know, none of the religions have everything set in stone, except the ones that do.
Here's a list.
Yeah, but so how do you respond to when people ask you some of these tough questions? Because I don't know how to respond when people ask me what.
So people ask me that a lot. You know, they ask me, how do I know that, you know, how do I know that my witchcraft is real? And for me, the key answer to that question is, did it work? Because if it worked, guess what? You're witching correctly, then it's real. But what's real for me and what works for me isn't necessarily going to be the same as what works for, you know, someone else or someone who's been practicing longer or not as long as me, or somebody who practices in a different way than me. You know, people always ask me, well, you know, how do I know which gods I should work with? Well, which ones want to work with you? Send out smoke signals or whatever, figure out, you know, which one have you been able to develop a relationship with? Because that's the one or the ones, you know? So I think, you know, and as far as the wheel of the year goes, that's a question that seems to come up a lot. You know, where I live, which isn't far from where you live, it's kind of cold this time of year. It's super. Do you guys have snow?
We do. It snowed more last night. Oh, good. But yay. It's in that weird temperature period where it's like between 31 and 38.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really, it's not, it's just slush.
Right.
It's a lot of snow and it's slush. It's great. It's wonderful.
So
it's
I don't have snow, but I have rain right now and it's gross, disgusting, but it's 47 degrees. 2 days ago, it was 12. It was just really bipolar weather. No pun intended. But, you know, coming back to the wheel of the year, it's like if you look at the weather outside, I sometimes think that should determine, you know, how you celebrate the wheel of the year. You know, they always talk about, okay, Beltane is a great example. One of my favorite celebrations, lots of fertility and fire and fun. It's good stuff. May 1st, where I live, you don't plant anything until Mother's Day weekend. That's the rule.
Yes.
Right? So for me, okay, on the calendar, Beltane might be May 1st, but I'm not celebrating that whole fertility of spring thing until probably the second weekend in May when I drag all the planting equipment out of my garage and start tilling my backyard.
It's always so weird for me. I mean, in bulk, I've really started to appreciate since I moved to Chicago and really got to experience the weather here. I've really started to appreciate some of those, you know, in between Sabbats where it's, you know, it's not one of the high holy days or whatever. It's not the Beltane. It's not the Samhain. I kind of appreciate those in between things because it forces you to stop and see changes and forces you to stop and see things. And as far as the history of everything, as far as whether or not it's real, I mean, just stopping every 6 weeks to just appreciate the passage of time and that you're still here. Exactly. That's real enough for me. And I don't know that I need it to be more than that.
Yeah, no. And I totally agree. You know, there's a lot of ancient cultures that just didn't leave us any information because they were busy doing other things. So people are like, well, you know, this isn't an ancient celebration. It didn't start until the whatever year. Well, you know, on a big enough timeline, all holidays are made up.
Oh, 100%.
You know? I mean, you know, I don't care whether it was invented thousands of years ago or whether it was invented 200 years ago. If it resonates with you and you feel a connection to it and you can embrace it, why not celebrate it? There's your real wheel of the year.
Well, like we put a lot of stock, you know, like Halloween is our big day, right?
Yeah. But like the Super Bowl.
But like modern Halloween is really young. And that's hard for a lot of people to accept because they want everything to be ancient. And I don't know why our community needs something to be ancient, to be valid. That's something that's what I've been struggling with since this show started, was just this whole idea that like we for some reason need something to be ancient in order for it to be valid. You know, like if every year on, I don't know, September 10th, you and your friends get together for a movie night and whatever, you know, the good feelings and the good times and the good memories and the good energy that you get from that celebration, that annual tradition, I don't know that it I mean, it's okay if it's just because that was, I don't know, the first day you guys got tacos together. And so now you celebrate it every year.
I think people should, you know, and especially, I mean, let's face it, we're all busy. We all have like a million and one things to do.
I don't know what you're talking about, but my team of assistants over here keep me very just like cool, calm, and collected.
Well, you need to send one of them to me because I need to borrow one. My four-legged assistant is taking a nap right now. So there's that. Yeah. But, you know, I always encourage people to, you know, if you can't find the time, okay, you can't get together with all your friends at Samhain because half of you work second shift and the other half are doing this and you got kids that you got to take trick or treating for beggars night, whatever. It's okay to make your own holidays. It's okay to create traditions. Traditions have to start somewhere. I remember years ago, one of the early emails I got was from a reader who said that she, kind of like what you were talking about, she and her friends had started this tradition. They get together on a certain day every year, which is the anniversary of the death of someone they all loved very much. And they do this shindig. And she's like, so should I, is it okay if we consider this kind of holy? I was like, that is so sacred. Absolutely. Yes. That is your tradition. And you've started it. And don't let anyone tell you it's not valid just because it's new.
So I wonder, because, you know, everybody always wants to know, everybody seems, when they ask a question of one of us, one of the people that put a microphone in front of our faces, they are always looking for validation. I need the real thing. I need the most ancient thing. I need the most real, you know, the valid thing, whatever I can, you know, point to a Wikipedia article and say, oh, see, it's confirmation bias. Right. But I think that it's just as important for those of us with a microphone to talk about when things don't go well or when things don't work.
Or, we've all been, you know, there.
I put all my energy into that little and the powder and the candle and the moon and I danced and I was naked and I had the stuff and it didn't work. Nothing happened. And I think that one of the reasons why the community does not like criticism. And I mean criticism in the sense of, like, you know, peer review, academic study kind of criticism. When we really don't like critique because we really don't ever want to acknowledge the fact that sometimes things don't work.
Right. Because then it might not be real.
Right.
Right.
Right. How do you, one, deal personally when things don't work? And two, how do you respond? I mean, do you get those questions? Oh, I've tried this and it doesn't work. What kind of advice have you given people for that?
Yeah, I do get those questions a lot. And I think one of the key things to the whole it didn't work, if we're talking about it didn't work in a magical context, sometimes it works, but you're looking at the wrong perspective. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of illustrate that, I'll share a story that I've shared in some of my in-person workshops, because it is the perfect illustration of why words matter and how sometimes you get what you requested, but it's not what you wanted. So years ago, back when I was a newbie witch, I mean, like I had only been practicing for, I mean, I wouldn't even say practicing. I'd been reading for a few months and studying, but I hadn't really done a whole lot of magical stuff yet. So I was on a road trip and I was traveling from Ohio down to South Carolina, returning back to South Carolina from a visit with my folks here in Ohio. And I'm a 19-year-old girl. I've got the top down on the convertible, got some Van Halen cranked up on the cassette player, cruising down 77, just hauling boogie. And of course, somewhere in the middle of West Virginia, I look in my rearview mirror and I see bloop, bloop, you know, there's one of West Virginia's finest pulling me over. And it was justified. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't one of those things where it was like, I was only going 2 miles over the speed limit. I don't understand why. Oh, I knew exactly why I was getting stopped. I was hauling ass.
I love being caught and fully knowing I deserve to be caught.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, he walks up to the car. He's like, Miss, do you know why I pulled you over? And I'm like, yes, sir, I absolutely do. I'm not going to lie.
It's like you've been stealing office supplies every day very flagrantly for the last 6 months. And all of a sudden somebody comes up from HR and is like, Can you stop stealing staplers?
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm so busted. I'm a big proponent of owning my
yep.
my errors. So I'm like, yes, sir. I know exactly why you pulled me over. And sure enough, he wrote me a ticket. Now, to be fair, he was kind of generous because he probably could have written it for way more than it was. But you know, I was 19 and cute, and it was summertime, so but I did get a ticket. So off I go, ticket in hand, back home to South Carolina. Now, let me remind you, I was 19. So I was kind of stupid because
so you
by default,
lessons.
19
you
year old.
Lessons.
Yeah. Like there's like, woof, you know, so I get home, I take the ticket and I'm like, throw it over. Completely forgot about it. I was like, I'm not going to pay that. I don't care about that. So I just like, you know, I just literally out of sight, out of mind. So then several weeks later, I get a letter from the Ohio Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which is where my driver's license was from, telling me my license had been suspended for failure to pay a speeding ticket in West Virginia. Well, this will not stand, I said to myself. I was like, I'm just going to magic this away. Because I was convinced, you know, somehow it gets better. Somehow I had it in my head that I was entitled to not have to pay this ticket because I just didn't want to.
Yeah.
I was flat ass broke and I just didn't feel like I should have to. I knew I was speeding, but they'll be fine without my $130 or whatever. So the more I talk,
girl,
to
I don't know if you've been to West Virginia lately, but $130 might make up a significant amount of their state budget. I'm just saying.
I'm telling you, I love West Virginia. It's beautiful, but I know that a significant portion of their revenue does come from, stupid 19-year-old girls flying down 77 in a convertible.
Yeah. I was born there. Half my family's from there. It is a poor, broke state, girl. That $130 goes a long way.
What, that's 2 weeks of groceries around here. So I was like, by the time I got to the point where it was time to do the magic, I had got it in my head. I was convinced that I had been wronged.
Oh yeah,
like this was just unfair.
I'm on your side here, girl. Yeah. You did nothing wrong.
It's just not right. So I did a spell. Here's the part where words matter. I did a spell for, wait for it, truth and justice.
Oh no!
Heal.
Oh no!
Oh honey. Well,
did you ever see your license again? Did you ever get it back?
Well, so the short version of the story was
Patty takes a lot of Uber these days.
I had to pay a significant amount to get my license reinstated. I had to pay a renewal fee on my car insurance, which had been suspended since my license was suspended.
Yep.
And I also got a couple of bills from the phone company for a bill that I had just not bothered to pay back in Ohio.
Yeah.
And a couple of other things that I had just sort of hoped would go away.
Mm.
So that $130 speeding ticket, thanks to magic, ended up costing me about $700.
Nice. That's
but
the
here's
good stuff.
The thing. Here's the thing. If I look back at what I did, that spell was 100% successful because I got exactly what I put out there. So that's one of those things where it's when people come to me and they're like, I don't think my spell worked. Well, did it or didn't it? Because what did you request? Mm-hmm. What did you do the working for? Because you might have gotten it. And if you didn't, then you have to go back and you break it down. And anytime you make a mistake like that one, anytime the magic doesn't go as planned, you really have to reevaluate. What did I do? And did I get what I wanted after all? Or did I just screw up somewhere? And then you take what you learned and you make sure you don't make the same mistake. I never make the same mistake twice.
And I think that people, I think that people too often really get upset that we aren't Sabrina.
Yeah.
I think that they just get so upset that we can't just point and do something and that's not what magic is.
Right.
You know, even if you did everything right and you put out your will into the world and you tweak a couple of little bits of chaos out there to maybe align some things your way. Girl, there might be some karma. There might be some events already set in motion. There might be some forces of nature out there that I'm
so
sorry, bud,
factors.
But your little candle isn't going to overcome. I'm so sorry to tell you, sweetheart. No, no.
Yeah, there's so many other factors involved. I really think that people expect instant gratification. Mm-hmm. They want it fast. They want it easy. They want it now. And they want what they want. And I'm sorry, but if you're not willing to do the work and really put in the work, if you're not willing to put some effort into it and get dirty and muddy and bloody and, you know, spend $130 on a speeding ticket you shouldn't have had to pay for, you know, if you're not willing to get your boots on the ground and your hands in the mud, magic isn't for you.
Nope.
It's just not.
No, magic is for magic, but really, honestly, any path that requires participation isn't for people that want to sit on the sidelines and watch their craft right. pass them by.
Yeah, it is absolutely an active system. Yeah. It is not designed for people who thrive on being passive. If you want to sit back and be passive, there's plenty
you
of others.
You have to do the stuff. You have to do the stuff in order to get the thing.
Exactly. And we all have to do the stuff.
And I love, you know, there's that famous quote by Beyonce that I'm about to butcher, but she's like, you know, you can do your best. You can make no mistakes. You can, you know, have all the preparation. You can have been the best and still lose. You can have done everything right. You can have been in the right and it can still not go your way. And I think that I think one of the things that I have had the most ire about...
I love that word, ire.
Yes, I do too. I'm practicing for March when I get to say the word ides a lot.
Oh, yes, that's a good one too.
But I think one of the things that I have a lot of issues with is that we just... The public face of paganism is one where magic always works.
Oh, of course.
The goddess is just, we have tea with the goddess every morning.
Oh, yeah.
She physically manifests in your kitchen.
She's my home girl.
Yeah. Yep. And there's just this internet version of paganism that just doesn't seem to ever line up with reality. And I think that's where people get really discouraged because there's just not a lot of honesty in our discussions, which is why I've always liked your articles, because there just seemed to be a frankness and an honesty. And even when you were, you know, even when we sort of have to play nice with the topic at hand, there was still a no bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, my approach to presenting information is I always want people to feel like they're sitting at my kitchen table with a cup of coffee and we're just having a conversation. I don't want to lecture at people. I don't want to deliver a monologue. I want it to be a dialogue. But I do think the no bullshit approach has been, well, it's certainly been effective for me because, you know, I'm still here. So here I am. But it's just the way I am. I'm not capable of sugarcoating things. You know, if I think somebody's wrong, I'll tell them I think they're wrong, but I'll also tell them why. And I'll also say, you know, this isn't going to work. And here's why. Maybe you would think about looking at doing it this way instead. And I think that's important because we do tend to do a lot of gatekeeping in the pagan community where it's like, you're not doing this right. You're not doing this correctly, but we don't offer solutions. We're just kind of like, we're so busy criticizing that we can't stop for a minute just to be helpful. And, you know, if 30 years ago, if someone had come to me and said, you know, okay, so that speeding ticket spell you're thinking about doing, that is a bad idea. And here's why. I don't know if I would have listened, but if someone had at least come to me and said, here's the thing, here's why not try this instead, you know, I could have probably saved myself $700. So
I think one of the things that lends to that sort of air of falsehood, of that mask that a lot of online pagans wear of, you know, I'm the uber witch, I'm super witchy, is because like the period of 2009 to 2011, when everybody was putting out their blogs and putting out their podcasts and putting out their whatever contributions to pagan media, people also are realizing, oh, I can also monetize this. I can make money off of this. There are people online that will buy my herbs and buy my spells and buy my candles and buy my thing if I have the right aesthetic. There's a lot of people that are that realize that there's money to be made out there. Now, the money in the pagan community is weird. It can't be expensive. It can't be, you know, the pagan community will support a very small number of kinds of things.
Right.
And it's interesting because a lot of the folks that are trying to sell you something or to make money off of their name in the pagan community are doing so with the sense of everything that they've ever done has always worked. And if it didn't, I had a super good reason why.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the ethics, and I ask pretty much everybody this. So I'm just curious your take. I'm curious about the ethics of making money off of paganism anywhere in that universe and how you ethically do that. I mean, I'm full disclosure, I'm somebody that firmly believes that you can make money off of it.
Sure.
Off of certain parts of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a discussion that comes up frequently. So I think we're looking at kind of two separate things. There's making money based on products versus making money based on services. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you look at a service, like what you do, you provide a valuable service. You are providing a podcast with really cool people coming to visit you and people are learning stuff. I mean, so, you know, should that be something that you're able to monetize? Well, you're investing your time and your energy in it and certainly no small amount of skill. Just like, you know, I get asked frequently to come to events in different parts of the country. And the pagan community is notoriously thrifty. It's probably a polite way to put it. We just don't want to spend money on stuff, which means that event promoters don't have a lot of money to spend on stuff. Typically, if I go to speak at an event, a festival or whatever, all I ask is just, you know, just comp me my admission for the day and I'm perfectly happy. Maybe give me a booth and a table so I can sit here and sell books for the day and chat with people. I'm not going to be asking for thousands of dollars. The flip side to that is when an event is on the other side of the country and they want me to fly out there on my dime, put myself in a hotel, take a week off of my full-time job, which is what actually pays my bills. You know, I'd be $2,500 in the hole just to do this event. So I've become more selective about the things that I do because while I don't have to monetize, I mean, I'm not sitting here rolling in cash. I mean, while I'd like to monetize things, it's not always possible, but I also don't want to lose money doing what I do. So then you come to things like products. You know, people sell things all the time. I am always willing to pay somebody for something that they crafted and created themselves with their love and their intent and their knowledge. I have several friends who blend custom oils and they make soaps and they put together these herbal blends. They make jewelry. I would buy those things hand over fist any day rather than, you know, just picking up like bulk items from a mass market retailer. But I think where you run into issues is you have people. And I hate the word influencer because it's become so you have these people who are like, I'm an Instagram influencer. I'm going to, you know, use my link and you can get these things, but they don't know the product. They didn't make the product. They've just got a large corporation that says, here, we'll give your followers 20% discount if they use this code. For years, I've had people asking if they could post links to their business, to their products, on my Facebook page. And I generally tell people, you know, since you were kind enough to ask, yes, you can go ahead and post the link. And then it turns into, well, could you promote it? And it's like, unless it's something I've personally used and can recommend because I used it and I know the product, I'm not doing it. Because if I do it for you, then I've got to do it for every Yahoo that comes down the pike. And I'm just not going to. Then it becomes a slippery slope of, am I promoting things that I believe in? Or am I promoting things because they pay me? And I didn't want to be that person.
And I think that I think that you're right in that, you know, there's products people will pay for and then there's services that people will pay for. But then even then there's those services that I guess my issue with the ethics of paying for witchy services is that there's not a lot of people paying for like Christian services. Like I'm not paying the local priest to come to my house and do something. I mean, like, you know, normally that's just a service that he goes out in the community and provides because he's clergy. Whereas our community has a lot more vague ideas of what clergy is and what the responsibilities are doing that. So like if I ask you to do a tarot card reading, if I ask you to read the runes, if I ask you to read some tea leaves or give me an astrology chart or something like that, there's certainly skill and there's certainly, time and effort and energy being expended there. And if you want to charge for that, I have mixed feelings, but I tend to err on the side of sure, fine, go ahead and charge. Right. But I do always wonder about charging for a service with the expectation of a result.
Yeah. And that's something, I do tarot readings on the regular, and I try to always be very clear with people when I'm reading for them that, here's what the cards are showing us. Here's what your potential path is. The onus of responsibility is on you to make things actually change. Mm-hmm. I agree as far as clergy goes, if I was a Christian and I wanted to get married in a Christian church, I would go to my Christian pastor and it would be a service that he performed. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of the package, I think. But in the pagan community, we don't have that. We don't have Pastor Patty sitting over there at the altar.
I need Pastor Patty to be a thing.
I want that on my business
card. I think you just found your Halloween costume.
I know. Oh, my God. Yes, that's a great idea.
The Pope hat. Can you get a Pope hat?
Pope Patty would kick ass. Yes. I would totally
with
do that.
A big glittery pea on a Pope hat.
And I can get one of those like plexiglass shields to walk in front of. He has, so I can be in the Pope.
Can I be your plexiglass?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I'll be your Pope mobile. Oh, yay.
I'm so on this. I'm so excited. Because you're a big tall guy. I could totally shield
I'm a very tall person, yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. But yeah, so if someone asks me to perform their marriage ceremony, I'm happy to do it. Yep. But it also means that I'm going to spend several hours creating a custom ceremony for them. I'm probably going to drive to where they are because they ain't getting married in my house. If they want me to be at the rehearsal dinner, that sort of thing. So I'm comfortable charging for that. Now I try to not make it cost prohibitive, because I realize that people that are getting married are spending a bunch of money on other stuff. So they don't want, I'm not going to charge someone $800 to come do their marriage ceremony, but depending on how much time I put into it and how much, effort and energy and skill and, the experience that I bring to the table, I'm comfortable charging for it. I've never had anyone who said that they didn't want to pay for it. When I've had folks who said, I don't know if we can even swing that much, I'll totally work with people. Because the last thing I want is for someone to not be able to get married just because they couldn't afford to have someone do it.
So I wonder, to take not quite a fully left turn, but a slight left turn. We have been active public pagan people for a long time.
Yeah.
There are big, capital B, capital E, TM at the end, big events that have happened. We have had, noted big name pagan authors have to go to court because turns out they've been hoarding child pornography.
Yeah.
We have had, a lot of issues, especially in the last few years with the Me Too movement coming to the pagan community.
Sure.
We have had, we have dealt with our own big fair share of scandals, large and small.
Absolutely.
And the interesting thing about those in my eyes is, unlike with the mainstream media and the mainstream community, mainstream media, if it bleeds, it leads, sex sells,
for sure.
That kind of thing. So a big scandal will be media coverage for weeks, months.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems to be the inverse with us. It seems to be...
We don't like to talk about stuff.
I mean, when we have a big name pagan author whose books have long been published by the largest pagan media publisher ever, and, so on and so forth, that guy goes to prison for child pornography. Boy, howdy, we are so fast to forget that happened.
Yeah.
We really don't want to talk about it.
We don't want to talk about stuff like that.
I wonder... when people write in, do they ever ask about some of these big events? I mean, do you feel, as somebody with an advice column, how do you take that kind of thing on? I mean, you've witnessed a lot of it, but how do we deal with it in public in that kind of venue?
Yeah, so I think the answer to that is a twofold question. I think it's important to understand why we don't want to talk about these things. Mm. And I've come to the conclusion, and I mean, certainly I don't know if this is everybody's reason, but I've come to the conclusion the reason we don't want to talk about it is because we're afraid that if we do talk about it, we might be acknowledging that, you know, it goes back to what is real. Mm. And we might be acknowledging that there's something not real about our pagan community. Never mind the fact that scandals and horrible big events happen in every religious group. But when it's one of our own, I mean, other, you know, a lot of other spiritual communities, they'll just eat their own, and, you know, thou shalt be shunned and whatnot. Although not always the case. But here it's kind of like, okay, well, we have to talk about this, but we shouldn't talk about it for long because there's a potluck coming on Sunday and we don't want to ruin everybody's mood with a bummer, you know? So I think to some extent, the reason we don't talk about this stuff is because we're afraid. Like, what if the non-pagan world finds out that we had this person in our community and he was here? Then they're going to think we're all a bunch of child molesters or child porn watchers or pedophiles or, you know, people who speak in the theater too loudly, you know, we're all terrible people. So I think there's a fear. I think that's the driving force behind us not talking about it. So then the flip side to that is, what do we do about that? Mm. We have to normalize the conversation. You know, if you're somebody who's planning a big event, you need to normalize things. And you do that by saying, okay, so here's our event. Here's the schedule. Here is our operating procedure for how to deal with potential negative events at our celebration. What do we do if someone comes to us and says, I'm uncomfortable around this person? What do we do if someone comes to us and says, there's a guy at the gate who I know for a fact is on the sex offender list? We have to have policies. And when we start talking about it just as par for the course, you know, then we kind of normalize the fact that we acknowledge these horrible things have happened. We acknowledge they exist. But most importantly, we acknowledge that we have to do what we can to prevent further incidents like this. So I think we have to take a proactive approach, because if we're not talking about it, then we're not doing anything about it.
Serious question for you for a moment.
Sure.
When people write in asking whether or not we eat babies, do you tell them the truth?
I mean,
like, do you give them a recipe for a good baby sandwich?
Yeah, or like, I feel like it depends on like whether you want to roast or barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been using my air fryer and it's wonderful. Yeah. So it gets them nice and crispy.
Yeah, so, I've been doing a whole 30, so I just bake everything instead of deep frying.
That's so, you're so smart. See, I'm learning, right? I'm learning from Pastor Patty. So on a lighter note, one of the other things that keeps coming back is this idea. Thank you to the founders of Wicca for Harm None. Mm. How do you take on the topic of Harm None? Because it seems to be something that just a nice core nugget of us really like. I think, you know, we come to this community and we say it's because we're leaving because we you know, whatever path that we came from, because we don't like rules and we don't like don't like structure and whatever, but
we don't,
man,
like being told what to do.
We find a few rules and we hold on to them like Gollum, man, with a freaking ring, man. Like,
yes, they are our precesses.
Like, god, like, oh yeah. So how do you deal with like people that write in about all the rules
are so big? So, you know, rules are so subjective, but, you know, Harm None is a great example. It's two words out of a much longer piece, but people grok onto those two words. Mm. Because I think the majority of people who come to modern paganism came here from somewhere else. My personal experience was slightly different. I was raised by very agnostic parents who really just didn't give a shit what I believed or did as long as I got my homework done and showed up for dinner on time. So I had sort of always studied things that were a little outside, the standard religious upbringing because I didn't have that. But for most people who come to paganism, they started off somewhere else. So there's a part of them, it's really hard to unlearn the concept that religions have rules and you have to follow them. So people come into paganism or witchcraft or Wicca or whatever, and they're like, well, okay, so what are the really important rules that I need to remember? And, you know, we're all like, we can't even think of anything. They're like, oh, I know. I saw harm none and I saw the rule of three. So those are my rules. And those are what I'm going to live by. It's like, okay, you do you, boo. But I think if people need rules and they want rules to function effectively, okay, that's cool. But where it becomes a problem is when someone looks at me and says, oh, well, you shouldn't even do that because, you know, we're not supposed to harm anybody. And I get to step in because you don't know me.
It's that, you know, Facebook meme. And I forget the original source, so I apologize. But of you can believe that unicorns live in your shoes.
Yeah.
But if you start telling me how to wear my shoes so that I don't enter the unicorns, we've got a problem.
That's exactly it. You know, if someone is comfortable with the harm none or the whole rule of three concept, hey, you know, if it works for you, buddy, that's fine. Go for it. But the flip side of that is once we start pushing our rules on other people, then we become the very religious group that you just left before you came over here.
So let's talk pagan trends.
Oh, I love pagan trends.
Let's do pagan trends. What is a trend that you miss that you wish would come back? And what is one that has come back and you're like, are we really doing this again?
Let's see. Let's start with what do I miss? I miss the idea, you know, back in the the 2008, 2009 era, there was a lot of pagan mom bloggers. And
Chris Bradley was a big one of those.
Angie Punchman. There was a lot of pagan mom bloggers. And it was kind of neat because at the time my kids were younger, you know, they're big now, they're grown ups, they're practically feral. But at the time they were younger. So it was really cool for me as a 30 and 40 something pagan mom to have these other people writing about their experiences with their kids. Cause I never wrote about my stuff with my kids. So it was kind of cool to see that. And there was a lot of them. There were several. There was Chris, there was Angie, and there were two or three others that I followed on a regular basis. And I was kind of sad when that trend went away.
Sad when that specific trend went away too. And I tried to sort of revive the conversation a little bit. A couple of either last year, year before, I had one of my round tables. I do some round table shows every now and then. And I got on lots of different kinds of parents. And there was like a pagan parent and an agnostic parent and a Christian parent, you know, all these different kinds of parents, and talked about like raising your children with a spiritual upbringing or a lack of a spiritual upbringing and that kind of thing. Because I do miss that voice. And Pagan Parents on the Edge was a podcast.
Yeah.
And there was the Pagan Hooligans podcast, which was only here for like a year.
And there were
two.
All these books coming out about pagan parenting, like Kristen Madden had one, and there was Circle Round, you know, there were all these really cool resources for pagan parents. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of neat. I don't know if it's really gone away or if I've just stopped looking because my kids are adults now. I don't care what they do. I don't even know where they're at this point. That sounded terrible. I'm the worst mom ever. No. Do you know where your children are? Because I don't. They're around here somewhere. So I kind of miss the pagan parenting trend. I really miss that. That was incredibly valuable for me as a pagan parent. I didn't raise my kids to be pagans. They just kind of did their own thing because that's what kids do.
Well, I always liked it because, sometimes big pagan events aren't for me. I'm never going to be one that dances naked around a bonfire in public. I'm just not. Yeah. It's just not for me. And some of those, you know, go out and camp and whatever. I don't know. There's just always been something about that that wasn't something I wanted to do. And reading those pagan mom blogs, reading some of the books and stuff, I'm not a parent, but it certainly gave me some ideas for things that I could maybe do that kept me a little bit more in a space that I was comfortable with.
Right. Yeah, no, I think those were hugely important. And I sort of missed that trend. a trend that I would like to see go away that has come back. And we touched on this a little bit earlier. There's so much going on in the world right now that there are a lot of outraged and indignant people. That was something I first saw, you know, when I first started writing online in 2007, people would send me a link to a news article because I was writing about it in the sense of, here's this article I found, here's what I think about it, go read it. So I was doing that and people would send me stuff all the time, like teenage girl suspended for wearing pentacle, you know, things like that. Or, you know, just random stuff that they had found, because we needed something to be upset about. Yeah. We needed things to be angry about. So I would share that information and then it kind of went away, but now it's coming back. And now with social media, people are constantly tagging me. Like, did you see this article about this thing that this guy did? And he said bad things about pagans. It's like, dude, I already got enough on my plate to be pissed off about. Don't send me anymore. I live in Donald Trump's America. I'm angry all the time. Are you kidding me?
I join you in that. I mean, even though I am somebody that has had a longstanding podcast and blog and social media presence called Inciting a Riot, yes. I only incite very specific riots, and not absolutely everything requires us to fly into a rage.
Right.
Contrary to my public face, not everything requires
I think you have to be selective about where you place your energy. You know, for a really long time, especially following the 2016 election, I was, I think, and a lot of people were like this. I was just on the edge, just teetering, raggedy on the edge all the time. Like every time I turned on the news, there was something that just was horrifying to me, and it just kept spiraling out of control. So I put myself into sort of a self-imposed media blackout. And I'm so much happier for it. It's not that I'm unaware of what's going on in the world. I'm very much aware, but I'm very selective about what are my deal breaker issues and what stuff am I going to read and think, wow, that sucks, but I'm not going to read anymore. I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, where do I invest my time and my energy? Because for me, self-care is crucial. And part of self-care is to not put yourself in a position where you're spread too thin, whether it's with your anger or your activities or your energy or your relationships. If you spread yourself too thin, you can't give your all to the things that matter the most.
I'll tell you, my trend is controversial, of course, and it's going to make me a lot of enemies, but I've said it online many times. Astrology is everywhere again.
Yeah.
It's everywhere again.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. And all of the people online that are like, oh my God, I was so awful to everybody at work today, and I poured hot coffee on Karen because she looked at me wrong, and I stabbed an old lady because she was walking across the crosswalk too slowly, or, you know, whatever horrible thing that apparently they did. And they're like, oh, well, it's because my Capricorn is in the seventh house, or whatever. I don't know. I'm just like,
own your shit.
Yeah. The idea that. Yeah, the lack of personal responsibility and the attributing of it to your astrological chart, it gets under every inch of my skin.
Yeah,
it's just
I get you.
Yeah,
you know, another trend that I find very bizarre, and I'm hoping this goes away. There's constantly these memes of if you do this, then you're a witch, and it's if you light a candle, if you walk in the woods,
we saw the same post this morning on Facebook.
I'm like. Lighting a candle and having a pocket full of rocks does not make you a witch.
We saw this.
Stop that.
We must have been on Facebook at the exact same time this morning, because I looked at that and I was like, girl, no, that's just somebody.
I did not see it this morning. I've seen it for weeks, though, but it drives me nuts. I'm like,
I was looking at that this morning going, this is dumb. Come on.
If you like to smell flowers, you're probably a witch. No, no, no.
Right. No, it means you had a nana.
Passive. Yeah, it's like, okay, that is passive activity. That is not witchcraft. It's going for a nice walk and enjoying being outside. You know, your Catholic neighbor probably does the same thing.
Talking about real and talking about, you know, sort of the glossy face of paganism. Some of the things that I get asked every now and then are what is the best representation of witchcraft in media? And I have my own answers. But I wonder, oh great and mighty, about.com Pagan Wiccan Patty Wigington. What do you think I will give you two categories to make this easier for you.
Okay.
What has been for you the most authentic representation of paganism that you have ever seen in media?
Mm-hmm.
And what has been the most fun representation of pagan of witchcraft that you have ever seen in media?
So this is kind of a tricky one because I don't watch TV.
How?
Well, I don't have cable, so I just
because God, I don't either. But we cut that cord. We do the Netflix.
Yeah, I cut the cord years ago, so I have Netflix and Hulu. Yeah. But I don't watch a lot, and when I do watch things, I tend to binge. Like I'll just spend like 2 months going through an entire series and not watch anything else. And I only go to movies very once in a while, like if it's the Avengers or Star Wars. So my knowledge is kind of limited here. But I will say there's definitely some stuff I've seen in pop culture and the media that I have found intriguing and thought to myself, wow, that's pretty cool. So the one that's probably going to piss people off when I say this, but one of my favorite representations of witchcraft or magic or paganism in a film or TV is the original version of The Wicker Man. It's so great. It's so campy. It's so I know. It's awful. Not the Nicolas Cage version. That one doesn't count. So that's my favorite one just from like just like fun to watch. I rewatched it the other day and I was kind of like, oh, I'd forgotten how much I love this. But, you know, as far as actual practice, you know, I don't know. Anytime you see a movie where it's got a pagan or a witchy character, it is always just kind of like, ooh, you know, Expelliarmus, you know, people expect it to be instant. But I think the movie Practical Magic with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, it's a little silly, but the relationships that these women have with each other and with themselves and their self-awareness, I think there's valuable lessons to be had there. So I would call that a win.
I love that. I am also one that has given a lot of crap about the original Wicker Man.
I love it.
All of the Wicker Men. I'm just like, why do we like this movie? I also acknowledge that I am the only one of us that doesn't like that movie. I think I'm the only one. It's me.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm the guy.
Yeah. Ooh, can I throw in another one though?
Just of for course. Like, a short one?
Okay, the movie Witch with Black Phillip, the goat.
Oh, yes. Yes, it takes
place in like 1680 or something in like New England, and it's just really bleak and dark and just so.
And they got all of the dialogue from actual transcripts of witch trials. Yeah.
Yes, and I'm a history geek, you know, so that's my jam. So I actually loved that. It's so bleak and dark, but it was so gratifying to watch.
So before you bake your babies, you pulverize them.
You have to pulverize them. That's where pulverize you can bake them.
Pestle, the That's why I've been doing it wrong. I get all those teeth in there. Okay, gotcha.
No, you need to use something that grinds it a little finer.
Gotcha.
The grinder.
I think my most fun has got to be some kind of Disney movie, something like Sword in the Stone or something like that. What? The Witcher, episode of this season of The Witcher, I think has become my favorite, like fun version of witchiness.
With Yennefer at the Battle of Sodden Hill.
Oh my God, that whole battle sequence was amazing. But I think my most realistic is one that people laugh at me for, and it's the Hallmark TV series, The Good Witch.
Do you know, I keep hearing about that, but I've never seen it.
It is, I think it's the most realistic version of actual witchcraft I've ever seen on a show.
I'm writing it down on my index card here.
Okay, so here's the thing. It is Hallmark, so it is very cheesy. Like as far as the, the conflicts, the storylines, I mean, these are white people in Whiteville that all have money and nothing ever really goes wrong with them. Like it's mostly like, oh, the festival's coming up. We can't have the festival without the clock, you know, the clock. And then, oh no, the clock went missing. We must find the clock. And gotta have it by the time of the festival. It's in 3 days. That's just enough time for us to have a 90-minute series, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh my God, this sounds fabulously just cheesy. Yes. I can't wait.
But the actual witchcraft in it is, it's carry this rock, you know, do this thing. It's yeah. It's very subtle. It's very minimalistic. And it's like, well, no, I would do those things. Yeah. I'm like, I would yeah. do that. You know.
And I mean, I take a practical minimalist approach to magic anyway. So I'm gonna have to see if I can find
that.
So
if you're gonna do it, so there's two ways that you can do it. So there's all the Good Witch movies.
Oh, so there's movies and a series?
There's movies, and they became so popular that eventually they developed it into a TV show. And it's the same cast, except from the movies to the TV show, they killed the husband, and all of a sudden her daughter ages 15 years.
Okay,
so,
that's fair.
We don't really know how that happened. Time doesn't seem to work here. That you can watch all the movies, or you could just start the TV show. My favorite character in the show is her cousin, who's supposed to be like the bad one. She's my favorite.
Ooh, okay.
I love
so
her
I've
the
written
most.
This down, and I'm going to have to look for this on my various streaming services.
Enjoy.
I'm so excited.
What is the worst question you've ever been asked?
Oh. Okay, that's actually an easy one. I actually do remember this. The worst question I've ever been asked came from a guy who wanted to know why, when he went to festivals and events, there were so many fat pagans. So.
How'd you answer that, Patty?
Well, you know, as a plus size curvaceous goddess myself, I had plenty of things to say. You know, it was one of those things. This guy was pissed off because he went to some kind of festival, and he was mad because there weren't any beautiful women there to pay attention to him and fawn over him. So everybody was fat, everybody was ugly, everybody was in poor health. You can tell they don't take care of themselves. Blah, 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 blah,
and
blah,
I'm
blah,
sure
blah.
He was Chris Hemsworth.
You know, I have no idea what dude looked like, but I, you know, ugly on the inside is so much a thing. Mm. And I was horrified because, you know, if you're somebody who's, if you're going to a pagan event because, you know, you couldn't find anybody to swipe right on Tinder, this might not be the path for you. One of the things that I do love about the pagan community so very much is that it tries to be very inclusive of all sizes, shapes, ability levels, ethnic backgrounds. I mean, we're still pretty white, but we do have,
we're so white.
Such a white group. But we try to at least make people feel welcome and celebrate those differences. You know, I don't care if someone weighs 500 pounds or if they weigh 150 pounds. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. That's the bottom line. And this was probably the most offensive, obnoxious, hateful question I ever got. That doesn't count like the neo-Nazis who sometimes write to me and tell me, you know, that I'm like a horrible person because I'm not a neo-Nazi. But, you know,
one day I want all of us to get together and I want us all to bring our hate mail.
Oh my God. Yes.
And I just want us all to like read each other's hate mail. I have had some glorious hate mail over the years.
Oh my gosh. I used to save it because it was like a badge of honor. It was like, oh my God. You know, whenever I was feeling like, you know, oh, life is kind of boring, I should read some hate mail, you know. But then I got to the point where I was just like, I just didn't care anymore, you know.
I've never deleted any of the emails ever sent to Firelight. I've never deleted any of those emails. I don't know why. I guess yeah, one day when I'm old and gray and not doing this show anymore, and I guess it's fun to look back sometimes.
Yeah. I wish I had access to the oldabout.com emails. When they shifted us from one system to a new system, they got rid of our about.com email. But I had quite a few. But like I said, I just got to the point where, you know, some white supremacist wants to scold me because I didn't say like, Thor is the god of white people. You know, take a hike, buddy. I don't give a shit.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Patty, thank you so much.
Thank you
for spending your Saturday morning here with me.
You are so welcome. I'm so glad I got a chance to do this.
Also, why don't you have a podcast? Because I would listen to you every day.
Okay, so people keep telling me I need to have a podcast. And in fact, my boyfriend is like a sound and media and video guy, and he's like, I'll help you do it. I'll help
you do it. Okay, well, that's not fair, because if you're going to have a podcast, it can't be better than mine. So, no.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know when I would have the time, because I would be one of those people where I'd be really excited. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to bang out 3 episodes. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, and then girl. I'm just going to be like, oh, God, I'm really busy. Girl. I just don't have time.
That's precious. That is precious.
I know. I'm just like, you know, I'd be so excited about it, and then I'd run out of time and not know what I was doing. So I would prefer to just like hang out with cool people like you who have podcasts and just like be like the visitor.
I hope this means you'll come back sometime.
Yes, I'm like that fun aunt that shows up with like a bottle of whiskey and some tarot cards. It's like, now we're gonna hang out.
Oh my God, I love that lady. I've been watching a lot of Grace and Frankie, so I'm very into that lady right now. Lots of turquoise, her tarot cards, some rosé. Let's get this done.
Yeah,
I'm here for it. Patty, thank you so much for doing the show. I appreciate it so much. You have 2 books coming out this year. When are they coming out? What are the titles? Ooh.
So I have a book called Herb Magic coming out in the spring. I believe it'll be April, but it might be May. They haven't given me an official release date yet. That's from Rockridge Press. And then in the fall, I just found out it's now available for pre-order. I have a book coming out with Llewellyn. It's called Badass Ancestors.
Comes out in September. I love it.
So excited. It's my favorite thing I've ever done.
That's so wonderful. Awesome. And you've also got your Learn Religions blog. Sure. How do people get to there?
Yep. If you go to learnreligions.com and just click on the magic button that says paganism and Wicca, that'll take you to all the cool stuff that I've written.
That is so good. And if people want to connect with you otherwise, do you have any other public social medias?
I certainly do. They can find me on Facebook. It's at About Paganism on Facebook. I'm also on the tweeters. It's Pagan Wiccan on Twitter.
That is so awesome. Patty, thank you so much for being here today. It's just like a dream to sit here and talk with you.
Oh my gosh, you are darling. I'm so glad we got to do this. We should make it a regular thing.
100% we should make it a regular thing.
I'm going to come to Chicago and visit you and we can
hang
out. Yes!
Yes! We can do this for real. You can sit around my microphone.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yay. Thank you so much. Rioters, I hope that you enjoyed that interview with Patty Wigington as much as I did, because, oh my gosh, I am still basking in the glow of her badassery. Links for everything for Patty are going to be in the show notes at incitingariot.com. I encourage you to go engage with her online. She's wonderful. Everything she puts out is just filled with heart and sass and intellect and a wonderful perspective. So go engage with Patty. I love it. Once again, if you'd like to get a little bit more of this interview, either audio or video, you can give as little as $1 a month on Patreon, patreon.com/incitingprojects. And, you know, you can engage with me on social media as well. If you'd like to tweet me, I'm at Inciting a Riot, facebook.com/incitingariotpodcast. You can also find me, Firelight. And of course, the show notes, incitingariot.com. Please like, rate, comment the show on iTunes, Google Play. I don't know, make some signs, hang them up around your neighborhood. Lots of different ways to engage with the show and get new listeners. Anyways, thank you so much for being here and being a part of the show. If you'd like to email me, you can email Firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. If we get enough listener feedback about the show, maybe we'll do another little fast lightning round Q&A session with Patty on a future episode. So send those emails in, send those questions in. No question is too bizarre, no question is too bonkers, and no question is too basic. So we would love to do that for you guys. Anyways, I'm going to leave you. But as always, I will leave you with love and light, Firelight. Thank you.
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.